Hey, everybody. Mark Robinson joins the program, and then producer Andrew helps me unpack all the Robert Herr news as it was happening while we were live on air. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Become a member at members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. And as always, you can contact me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com, and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Really special guest joining us this hour, the next governor of North Carolina. We were just at an event together at Troy and Penny Maxwell's church, Freedom House Church in Charlotte. This guy's a superstar. I first came aware of him when he was talking about gun control at a local meeting, and he is a superstar. We're going to do everything we can to help him become next governor of North Carolina. He's the current lieutenant governor. It is Mark Robinson. Lieutenant Governor, welcome to the program. Great to see you.
Hey, thanks for having me, Charlie. It's a pleasure.
And I want to just say, just for whatever it's worth, you sitting down listening to my entire speech, that was really kind of you. Meant a lot to me. Not everyone does that. You know, they speak and they get out of Dodge. I wish we could have spent more time together. I had to get out of there for some other reasons. But you're a good man, and you're in it for the right reasons. You're a true patriot.
Well, thank you. And I truly enjoyed your speech that night, your conversation that you had with the pastors. The answers to the question that you gave were just they were phenomenal. Phenomenal answers. Really, really good.
Thank you. So I got to be honest, you know, I was driving in, I was running a little late on Super Tuesday. And, you know, sometimes I want to torture myself. So I listen to MSNBC and they spent 30 to 45 minutes on you. Talk about your candidacy. Mm-hmm. And why do you think that you're such a threat to the MSNBC crowd?
Well, you know, we're expecting about $100 million to come in this campaign against me for governor. And I think the reason why is because I think the Democrats are seeing some handwriting on the wall. They're seeing the dissatisfaction that their base voters are having, that being a lot of minority voters are having. They have a lot of dissatisfaction with what's going on at the federal level. Joe Biden has been an absolute disaster, whether it be on the economy, the border, public safety, no matter what it is, he has been a disaster. And they're seeing that dissatisfaction. But in my case, what they really see is they see a candidate that is able to reach out to those folks, bring common sense solutions to the problems that they face. And then they see someone who looks like them. And ultimately what happens there is we get into office and their success, and all of a sudden voting dynamics in North Carolina are changed for decades. And quite
possibly, it
starts across the nation. They're very afraid of that. They don't want that to happen. They cannot have a conservative black man at the helm in North Carolina or in any state.
So let's
it's going to show great results like President Trump did at the national level.
That's right. And so let's talk about it. You know, they might think Trump is going to win. They're already trying to think of what comes next. And they cannot have an articulate, passionate, patriotic, conservative black man be a popular governor in a state as important as North Carolina. Right. North Carolina is critical to their redefining goals. So the money coming in is they're trying to stop your career, stop the movement, because I'll be honest, you know, if Trump wins, which we pray he does in November, you're a top list if you become governor to be really a continuation of this movement. They see that. They need to try to keep their monopoly on Black America. And the way they're attacking you, I mean, I've seen a lot of political attacks. I have not seen the dishonesty towards someone not named Donald Trump like this in quite some time. It is reprehensible. I think you should sue MSNBC. I tweeted that out. They were calling you a Holocaust denier and all this garbage. Lieutenant Governor, your reaction?
My reaction is this, and I tell people this all the time. When I was in the seventh grade, it was junior high school back, I can remember taking the social studies class. In social studies, we learned history. And I remember being taught about the Holocaust. I remember the first time I saw the images of survivors of Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen and Buchenwald and those death camps. I remember seeing photographs of human bodies being stacked like cork wood. The savagery that the Holocaust represents. I saw that from the time I was a young teenager and have studied it extensively up until now. And for someone to say that I don't believe what I've seen with my own eyes is completely ridiculous. Not only that, Charlie, I also stood in Israel with the Israeli people 1 month after the worst attack on Israel since the Holocaust. I prayed with those people. I cried with those people. I saw the dreadful after effects of outright murder against women and children. I stood on those grounds and I witnessed those things. And for somebody to make those accusations to me is completely unfounded and just, quite frankly, ridiculous.
I want to play the tape here because I think I was one of the first people to find this and put it on social media, only because I was in the car listening to MSNBC. Listen to this. They should be, I know you got to run a campaign, but I'll tell you, they should be sued for this crap. It is moral crap. Play cut 42.
When you have to say the Holocaust was real and Hitler was evil, both in a primary ad, you know that this is not a normal primary year. But Mark Robinson is not a normal primary winner. He will be the Republican nominee for governor in North Carolina. He has, in fact, called the Holocaust hogwash. He says Beyonce is satanic. He says the moon landing in 1969 may have been fake. He says the civil rights movement in the 1960s was, quote, crap, and that Martin Luther King was a communist. He also says there is a secret ruling cabal that is part reptile, meaning part human, part reptile.
Now, I don't want to waste our valuable time of you going through the, you know, that nonsense, but I want you to just riff on the Holocaust one, because that is the one that they're going to try to use against you. And I have your Facebook post. You were talking about how the Nazis took away guns, which led to the extermination of Jews. That is factual. That is historically accurate. Mark Robinson.
Or more to the point, how a weak leftist government set up gun control in a way that a punk like Hitler could use it to victimize people. Look, these folks know exactly what I mean. They knew exactly what I was saying. But the bottom line is this. They want to talk about everything else under the sun except for the issues. And why do they not want to talk about the issues? Because whether it's the border, whether it's our economy, whether it's education, doesn't matter what it is, they lose on every single solitary substantive issue out there. They don't have one single solitary win. So what they want to do is smear the windshield with a bunch of garbage so that folks can't see what's going on and can't get a glimpse into the future under conservative leadership. But I guarantee you, we're going to clean that windshield off, push past all this mud, and move forward and give people a vision they can believe in.
I love it. And you are the highest profile governor's race in this election year. Highest profile. Think about all the places they could deploy capital. They're going to put $100 million. Why? Because they think, okay, we can start Mark Robinson. We can stop MAGA of tomorrow. That's their calculus. We can stop this ascendant movement. And plus, you have plans to make North Carolina a new Florida in the best possible way. It's competitive for business, safe for kids to go to school. About 1 minute in this segment, Mark, talk about some of your vision for North Carolina and contrast that with the failure of the Democrats in your state.
Well, so I'll put it this way and just make it short. Someone asked me what makes me different from my opponent on the opposite side of the aisle. This is it. I'm part of a winning team. He's part of a losing team. His team had us $3.4 billion in debt to the federal government. My team has us now with a $5 billion surplus. His team had us lackluster on business engagement. Our team has us as the number one business destination in the nation 2 years running. The differences could not be more clear. My vision is to grow our economy from Murphy to Manio. His vision is more of the same old thing. Agenda, agenda, agenda. And forget about the people and forget about growth. He's going to style himself as a moderate Southern Democrat. Josh Stein is anything but that. He is a hard leftist cut from the same cloth as Joe Biden and that governor out in California. And he will do things here in North Carolina that will take us backwards, not forwards.
And make no mistake, the lie about the Holocaust thing is just trying to play into Josh Stein's hands. That's part of the whole thing. They're trying to make it an issue where it doesn't exist. I think you should play offense on it. Lawfare, legal, show that you were in Israel. These people are good for nothing. And you should take it as a compliment. They see you as one of the top five threats to the left in the country. Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? I understand. I was right where you are 2 years ago. Let me tell you why I chose the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Program. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition. There is so much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reason you gained this weight in the first place. There's no shortcuts, pills, or injections, just solid, science-based nutrition and behavior change. And finally, probably most importantly, I lost 30 pounds. Look, they're amazing. If you want to lose weight, you got to go to myphdweightloss.com. I was just texting with Dr. Ashley Lucas today. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900. Go online at myphdweightloss.com. Do what I did and what hundreds of my listeners have done and call today, 864-644-1900. I recommend their program. Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition, but it's so much more. Go to myphdweightloss.com, myphdweightloss.com. Call 864-644-1900. I lost over 30 pounds. Dr. Ashley Lucas, great American. Check it out, myphdweightloss.com. Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson continues. I think it'll be really helpful, Mark, if you told our audience your story. It's a true story of a grassroots citizen who is now on the national stage.
Well, I have a very non-traditional route into politics. I have a very non-traditional route into politics, and some folks will say I have a very non-traditional upbringing. I'm number 9 of 10 children born. Our family was extremely impoverished by American standards, of course, but not by world standards. We did eat every day. We had a home. But my father was an alcoholic. He was very abusive towards my mother. He died when I was 12 years old. My mother was largely responsible for my upbringing. My mom had a big choice when my dad died. She could have sat home and accepted the gifts of the government, so to speak, welfare, or go to work. And my mom went to work. And I watched my mom as a young kid. I watched my mom walk to work, to the university, to go to work as a custodian, to provide for us. And it set a standard in my life to let me know that it's up to me. It's not up to the federal government. It's not up to the state government, the county government. It's up to me to take care of my family, because that's exactly what my mom did. I spent a little bit of time in the United States military in the Army Reserves. I was what's called a medical specialist in 91A10. Part of an ambulance company out of Winston-Salem. And that was a great time in my life, but I didn't choose to make the military a career. I was honorably discharged around 1990, 91, somewhere around there. And then I went into furniture manufacturing. I spent about a total of 20 years in furniture manufacturing altogether. Three different places. Two of those places first place I had to leave because of NAFTA. NAFTA just destroyed the wages. The second place I went, I worked for about 10 years, and NAFTA struck again and shut that place down, and it moved down south, down to Mexico. And then I was at the final place where I worked, which that's where I gave that speech in front of the city council and went viral. Been seen by 200 to 300 million people all around the globe. And that's when folks called for me to run for office, and ultimately we decided to do that. We picked the lieutenant governor spot, and we won a 9-way primary, and we won our general. Here we are.
That is just incredible. What makes North Carolina such a unique battleground state? What is it about the Tar Heel state that just always tends to be so close and so split ticket?
Well, you know, North Carolina's always been unique. And North Carolina, I say this at the behest of maybe making some of my conservative friends angry, North Carolina has always been a very moderate Southern state. Its history has been a history of being very moderate. But this state right now is poised to go all red, and I'll tell you why. North Carolina prior to 2010 was $3.4 billion in debt to the federal government. We were furloughing state workers because we couldn't afford to pay. Teacher pay was frozen for an entire 6 years. And no one wanted to come to North Carolina to do business because taxes were too high and regulations were too stiff. We had a Republican takeover of our legislature in 2010. And now today we find ourselves not only not in debt to the federal government, we have a $5 billion surplus. Teachers are getting raises. State troopers are getting raises. We're the number one business destination in the nation, 2 years running. Everybody wants to come here to North Carolina to do business. We're firing on all cylinders, but we have a grand opportunity right now to really grow our economy, to supercharge it, to make ourselves into the economic superpower we can be. And I think that's one of the reasons why this state is going to be focused on in this race, because we're at a crossroads. Are we going to go left? Are we going to go the way of California? Or are we going to go the way of Florida, or Texas, or Arkansas, or other conservative states? I would submit to you that the people of North Carolina are ready to make that right turn right into a right future.
It really is a tipping point question. How can people support you? What is your website? I know that you're going to be significantly outspent. How can people get behind you?
We're at Mark Robinson for NC. That's Mark Robinson, FORNC.com. They can go to our website there, learn more about our campaign, of course, do the things they need to do thereof.
Mark, great work. We have your back. Thank you so much. We have your website URL up on screen. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate everything you do.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. What an unbelievable start to 2024. We had last month saving babies with preborn by providing ultrasounds. And we're doing again this year what we did last year. We're going to stand for life because remaining silent in the face of the most radically pro-death administration is not an option. As Sir Edmund Burke said, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing, and we're not going to do nothing. Your gift to preborn will give a girl the truth about what's happening in her body so that she can make the right choice. $280 can save 10 babies. $28 a month can save a baby a month all year long. And a $15,000 gift will provide a complete ultrasound machine that will save thousands of babies for years and years to come. And will also save moms from a lifetime of pain and regret. Call 833-850-2229. That's 833-850-2229, or click on the preborn banner at charliekirk.com. That is charliekirk.com, and click on the preborn banner. Also save moms from a lifetime of pain and regret. I'm a donor to this organization. They're terrific. Go to charliekirk.com, click on the preborn banner. Joining us now to help me understand the Robert Herr saga, because I haven't had a chance to watch it as we've been live on air, is producer Andrew. Andrew, what's been going on here? Remind our audience, who is Special Counsel Herr and why is it significant?
Yeah, so Special Counsel Robert Herr was appointed to investigate the classified documents handling thereof of President Joe Biden. And he was a former U.S. attorney in Maryland appointed by Donald Trump. And Merrick Garland appointed him to look into the classified documents scandal of Joe Biden. And obviously, he issued a long report where he did not pursue charges against President Joe Biden, and basically said that he was an elderly man that had memory issues. And this became a massive, massive story that we basically have an official DOJ document authorized from the very top of the DOJ that says that our sitting president has memory issues, that he's a elderly man with mental acuity problems and memory lapses. And this then led to a whole bunch of other questions. And so now he's testifying before the House, and it's been an absolute mess. It's been an absolute mess. But one of the more intriguing parts of this, Charlie, is that just hours before testifying, Robert Herr resigned from the Department of Justice. So he is now a private citizen. And why that is important, so he's represented by a private attorney that's sitting alongside him. Why that's important, and people need to understand this, is that if he was still an employee of the Department of Justice, he would have had to get his testimony approved by the DOJ before his testifying. So what this means is he's essentially completely green. He has a green light to say whatever he feels is the truth. And he's not going to be corralled by his handlers at the Department of Justice. That is obviously Joe Biden's Department of Justice. So we're getting a pretty unvarnished look at what Robert Hur actually thinks. Now, here's the other rub. Both sides are unhappy, right? The Republicans wanted Joe Biden to be prosecuted, similar to the way that President Trump has been prosecuted by Jack Smith in Florida over his documents and his handling of classified documents. And that didn't happen. Robert Hur declined pursuing charges against Joe Biden because he basically had to have a good reason. His reason was he's got a bad memory. And so the Republicans are not happy about that. Now, Democrats are not happy about it either, because they just said that the sitting president, the leader of the free world, is so mentally challenged, has such a mental acuity problem that he's not fit to be prosecuted. So obviously that raises the question. If he's not fit to be prosecuted, then he's not fit to be president. And so President Biden has denied the framing of his memory and his mental acuity. He said he's sharp. Everybody's going to be pointing to the State of the Union speech where they say he was 10 out of 10 on fire after they shot him up with whatever they shot him up with. And so that then begs the question, well, if he is mentally sharp, as the Democrats say, then why not prosecute him? Because one of the things we learned here was that Robert Hur says that he absolutely is not exonerating President Biden. This is not an exoneration. He intentionally did not use those words. And we've got a great clip that we can play with Rep. Jayapal to this effect. Cut 54 if the studio wants to get that ready.
Cut 54. That was super helpful, Andrew. And then they say that, oh, he's exonerated. I even learned a lot there. I have a question. Play cut 54.
So this lengthy, expensive, and independent investigation resulted in a complete exoneration of President Joe Biden. For every document you discussed in your report, you found insufficient evidence that the president violated any laws about possession or retention of classified materials.
I need to go back and make sure that I take note of the word that you used, exoneration. That
is not a word that appears in the report. I'm going to continue with my questions. I know that the term sufficient evidence existed such that the likely outcome would be a conviction. I know that the term willful retention has a – Mr. Hur, it's my time.
That's pretty feisty for Hur. And I just – so can we speculate, why did he resign from the DOJ? Just that he wanted to be able to give a truthful testimony? And is it possible that Hur wanted to bring this case forward, was afraid that it would either lose with a D.C. jury or that the powers that be would squash it from DOJ? I mean, I'm getting those vibes from Hur.
Well, so here's their – I think the Democrats are assuming that he is a partisan actor and that he wanted to resign from the DOJ so that he could essentially really go for the jugular here. And there are a few other clips that we need to play that would suggest that the Democrats and their suspicions could be at least partly right. I think Hur has taken so much criticism for this report. I would think he wanted the unvarnished truth. He wanted the opportunity to say what was really what he believed is the truth. And that's that, you know, essentially he did not pursue charges because Joe Biden is not fit to be prosecuted. I think that is genuinely his only leg to stand on. And so he needed a clear lane to defend his reputation and say, hey, this is the facts. And there's also more damaging information that we're learning now today. And that's in this cut 53 in this exchange with Jim Jordan, where he says that the ghostwriter that's responsible for the transcription of the interview with Joe Biden attempted to destroy the interview, the audio from the interview. So these are the types of – and we can play this clip, 53. It's powerful. But these are the types of, you know, pieces of evidence that you wonder, would you have heard if he was being controlled by the upper echelon at the Department of Justice? We really don't know. But right now he's free to say whatever he thinks he should say. So that's quite something. But if we want to play 53, I think.
Yeah, let's play 53.
Mr. Hur, what did that ghostwriter do with the information Joe Biden shared with him on his laptop? What did he do after you were named special counsel?
Chairman, if you're referring to the audio recordings that Mr. Zwanitzer created of his conversations with
exactly what I'm referring to.
He slid, if I remember correctly, he slid those files into his recycle bin on his computer.
Tried to destroy the evidence, didn't he?
Correct.
So who is it? Who are they accusing of trying to destroy the evidence? Joe Biden?
So the ghostwriter that was basically getting those interview, the audio from the interview with Joe Biden, he tried to. So when they were having the preliminary conversation with Joe Biden about these documents, and again, this is the evidence that leads Robert Hur ultimately to say he had, you know, poor memory. This is at least part of the evidence. The ghostwriter tried to delete and destroy the evidence. So, so Blake's got a note here. The narrative of Hur's report in this hearing is that Biden kept classified docs so that he could make his memoirs better. So that's going to be the counterpoint from the Democrats. That's why he was keeping classified documents. And Robert Hur saying, well, you did keep classified documents. You absolutely did. And you did it intentionally as a private citizen. But I'm not going to prosecute you because of your poor memory. This evidence that's been that was attempted to be deleted is part of what is now being subpoenaed. They want to get that entire transcript because it's going to underscore Robert Hur's findings, presumably that Joe Biden has a poor memory and he's lacking sufficient mental acuity to be prosecuted. So this is that central tension in this question. Either way, it's a massive PR loss for Joe Biden. And I think, you know, if you're a cynic, then you would say Robert Hur knows that prosecuting a sitting president is probably a fool's errand. But telling the world that he's lacking mental acuity is probably the biggest shot across the bow you could have in a short amount of time before November.
Well, and also, isn't it is basically the argument that Hur thought that Joe Biden could have won at trial because he could have just claimed mental acuity issues, essentially.
That's the legal rationale. That's exactly the legal. That's what makes Robert Hur basically his findings that I'm not going to prosecute Joe Biden. That's the leg he's standing on. It's like this wouldn't succeed because he's an old elderly man who can't remember anything. So I'm sort of looking between the lines here. And if you're Robert Hur, if you are a partisan, if I'm being a cynic, then this could be the most damage you could inflict upon Joe Biden in a short term. But we have no reason to think that Robert Hur is that partisan as the Democrats are making him out to be. He seems to be a man of integrity, an honest broker here. But the Democrats certainly want to paint him as a partisan actor in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can't have it both ways. You can't say, you know, too old to stand trial, but not too old to be president. Right. You can't have
exactly.
You can't have it both ways, I suppose.
Yeah, that's the central tension here. But I mean, there's a couple other clips that I think that are really telling in all of this. If we have enough time, basically cut 50 is probably the whole case laid out if we want to play that.
Okay, let's play cut 50.
My team and I conducted a thorough, independent investigation. We identified evidence that the president willfully retained classified materials after the end of his vice presidency when he was a private citizen. This evidence included an audio recorded conversation during which Mr. Biden told his ghostwriter that he had, quote, just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote. When Mr. Biden said this, he was a private citizen speaking to his ghostwriter in his private rental home in Virginia. We also identified other recorded conversations during which Mr. Biden read classified information aloud to his ghostwriter.
That's pretty damning.
Yeah, it's also
yeah. No, that's
and that, Trump is also currently under indictment for classified
yeah,
documents.
No, exactly. No, and so you see the two-tier justice system at play here. Trump is facing 700 plus years in federal prison. Meanwhile, Joe Biden gets off scot-free with having a poor memory. Now, again, you know, it's a PR disaster for the Biden White House. Because it plays into a narrative that all of us can see with our own eyes that he's lost his edge. He's lost his ability to properly run the country. But it's also infuriating. And you can see why both sides are upset because he should be prosecuted. He knowingly handled classified documents and shared them with his ghostwriter of a memoir. So it's pretty infuriating either way you look at it. And welcome to America, I guess.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. As you know, Mike Lindell has a passion to help you get the best sleep of your life. after he invented the world's best pillow. He created the famous Giza Dream Sheets. They are the best sheets you'll ever sleep on. The best night's sleep just got even better. For a limited time, you'll get a queen-size set of $59.98, king-size for just $69.98, the lowest prices in history. Mike and the MyPillow employees continue to be canceled by big box stores and attacked by the media. They appreciate all of your great support during these times. I want to thank you by giving you the best specials on all their MyPillow products. To get the best specials ever, go to MyPillow.com or call 800-875-0425. Use promo code Kirk. You get the famous Giza Dream Sheets, queen size for just $59.98 and king size for just $69.98. You also get 60% off the original My Slippers. So call 800-875-0425 or go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Andrew, this is incredibly significant, and it turns out that the United Kingdom is ahead of us as far as protecting their children.
Yeah, I mean, really significant. I can't overstate how big of a deal this is. And I think you're going to see this trend follow, you know, you're going to see this happen in other countries across Europe. And what's interesting is what you said before. We look at Europe as this liberal, progressive bastion, if you're a Democrat in America, especially. And the truth is much more complicated. They are more tied to tradition and the old, the tried, the true. In a lot of ways than America is. America is a country of fads, of crazes. There's a lot of just energy, kinetic energy in America that Europe doesn't necessarily have. They have a sense of tradition and of what's gone before them simply by their architecture, we call it the old world for a reason. And they're not as prone to some of the swings that we are in America. And you're seeing that now in, I think, this NHS decision to stop prescribing puberty blockers to minors. So this is a massive, massive move. Hopefully we will adopt that here. Certainly we've been a part of the movement to push back against this craziness. But I mean, this is fantastic news, and hopefully it spreads.
Yeah. And the question is, you know, will we have the political will to do this in this country? I mean, we just revealed what WPATH was doing, and they call you transphobic, and they say that you are getting in the way of gender affirming care. The only cynicism I have, and the reason they're able to do this at NHS, is that they have universal health care. So it's just kind of the top, the way it is. We have so many private actors. I'm not advocating for universal health care, but we have so many private actors that are making billions of dollars on the mutilation of children. How do we unwind that?
Well, I think you got to start at the state level, and then you've got to use some lawfare, right? The left is doing this. We had the Attorney General of Tennessee on yesterday. They're now gathered 16 states to sue the state of Maine, but Maine is being really creative. They're making it so that if you're you could be now liable in a legal sense if you're not prescribing or treating gender dysphoric youth with some of these what they call gender affirming care practices. So Maine is making it so that we're now liable in other states outside of Maine. Well, why don't we flip the script and start suing some of these states for mutilating kids? So I think it's a twofold. You got to start at the state level. State AGs need to start protecting innocent kids, and then you need to start suing the states like California and Maine that are getting a little bit too out over their skis. And I think eventually you create so much liability in the system that the health providers are going to start feeling a little bit cautious about treating minors with this stuff.
If you look, you call it the sexual culture war. You look at the sexual revolution, gay marriage, abortion. This is the first time we're really starting to see massive backlash against one of these issues, especially with children. It is losing across the board. And I think President Trump should embrace it. Joe Biden is all in on the mutilation of children, on the castration of kids. I mean, that would be if they end up debating, it would be a very powerful debate moment for Donald Trump to say that you are okay, Joe Biden, with stuff that the United Kingdom is not even okay with, which is castrating kids, sterilizing them, puberty blockers. I think it's a winning political issue. I really do.
Yeah. We should start. Honestly, we should start suing doctors. We should start going after the doctors that push this stuff. And again, you make
jail.
It so painful.
They should.
You should make it so painful and expensive to even set foot in this area of medicine that we really get some wins, and that they'll just be more reticent to even try it to begin with. And I think you could get 80% of the way there just with lawfare.
There's a new wing at Mayo Clinic for just mutilating children. There's a lot of money to be made, but the message needs to get out. If you mutilate kids, you will go to jail, and it will be retroactive. It doesn't matter if it was legal at the time.
Yeah.
They need to go to jail if you touch and chop off kids' parts. Andrew, thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.